This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everybody. Here we are on Target St. John's on this beautiful Friday afternoon. We're expecting a bit of rain. I hope we do get a bit of rain. Have you noticed how dry everything has become, even though our temperatures have been a little bit cooler? But as someone who pays close attention to her garden, it's been a little bit worrying as of late. So I had to actually go out and do a bit of watering last night. Well, somebody who knows an awful lot about these kinds of things is on the line with me now. And we're going to talk about various aspects too. What other things are important to a garden. It's not just water, it's also bees. And here to talk a little bit about that is Paul Dinn. He's with Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
Great. How are you this afternoon?
Oh, doing quite well. I think it's last November I was on your show the last time, and we were touching base on bees, and we touched off on a little bit on importation of honeybees from other parts of the world. And not in my wildest dreams did I ever think the unthinkable would be actually contemplated. But here we are, that our province and our provincial government and Jerry Byrne and the Beekeeping Association actually have supported the importation of honeybees.
You call that the unthinkable. The Beekeeping Association and the Department of Agriculture has said that this is necessary. Why would the importation of bees be necessary?
You know, I'll tell you something. That's what we're also wondering. And we've actually asked them. They've stated, the provincial chief apiarist actually stated that it would be under rare and exceptional circumstances of them importing bees. So we asked them the question to say, we actually wrote an email and a six-page paper on it and asked, you know, what are these reasons? And please, you know, tell us what they are. And to date, they have not responded to us.
I assume this has to do with agriculture. Why are bees so necessary when it comes to agriculture?
Well, that's really what's so crucial, and what we want to talk about our honeybees and why they're so important is honeybees are, you know, they pollinate all the flowers, which they're actually what they call the foundation of agriculture. So a lot of people will say that, you know, honeybees are livestock and that they're no different than a cow or eggs or chickens or what have you. But honeybees are much more valuable because they actually, every time you bite into an apple or you get cherries or oranges or any kind of pretty well fruit and a lot of vegetables, that is because a honeybee has pollinated that flower to grow that fruit. So it's amazing because we you know, as difficult as it is, I'm a meat eater and I love like steak and chicken and all these different things, but we could literally survive without that. We cannot survive. The human race cannot survive. They're producing one-third of the world's food supply is from pollination. So on the mainland and even here, there's a lot of people that do what's called pollination services, where honeybees are trucked around the country and actually brought to farms, to apple orchards and cherry orchards and such, to pollinate those valuable crops. So we literally cannot survive without honeybees.
No, I was going to ask you, is that what's being proposed here, that we would have a similar kind of operation where bees would be shipped around to different agricultural sites?
That's correct. And this is the thing is, you know, the other parts of the world, the honeybees are in constant decline. They're fighting all kinds of pests and disease. And I mean, similar to like today, we just had our first case of COVID-19 in the province. Well, we're talking about over 22 different viruses and diseases, plus several pests that are not in this province. We're Newfoundland, the island, is literally one of the last refuges for honeybees in the world. It's only us, the Isle of Man off of Scotland, and Western Australia. Those are the last remaining places. So you're talking about bringing in what they call bee packages. The way this is done actually is very harsh in the first place, because when they do up these bee packages in Australia, they're actually doing it during their summer, but then they have to travel from Perth, Australia, to Hong Kong, to Alaska, then they go to Vancouver and on to Toronto and then to St. John's. And we receive them, believe it or not, in wintertime. So if you look at honeybees that are in a nice warm climate, they're used to that area, we're bringing them here in our winter.
So how feasible is it? How many of these bees actually survive that kind of journey and survive introduction during the winter?
I'm sure a lot of them don't survive. That's the scary thing. But the thing about it that they would actually contemplate doing this. So if you look at our honeybees right now, what makes them so special is they don't only survive our climate, but they thrive here. So we watched our honeybees foraging in very cold temperatures, plus one, plus two, and they're actually coming in and bringing in pollen in November. I think the latest we've ever seen them was like November 17th. And you're talking about, so they're used to getting through a very challenging winter and then coming in, and they're great honey producers, and they're laying their young and mating in the spring. And next thing you know, they're doing fine. They've grown since 2013. I think we had 400 colonies. Now we're up to like 900 colonies. And so they're doing quite well. The other thing that's great about them is because they're so healthy, we don't have to medicate them, and we don't have to substitute feed them. So if you can picture someone, say, in Ontario or someone out west, they have to basically be sugar feeding and artificial pollen. They also have to medicate their bees to keep them alive. And they're losing upwards of 90% of their beehives to these diseases and these pests. We're not losing, we do lose bees here, but we're losing them through starvation or new beekeepers, you know, not mishandling them and not knowing exactly what they need to do in the wintertime. And there's absolutely, you know, I'm shouting out to Mr. Byrne as I'm here now, to Minister Byrne, to say, what are these rare and exceptional circumstances for bringing in bees to our province? It's absurd, really, to be honest with you, Linda.
How many are we talking about?
Well, we don't know. We know that in 2016 they imported 130 colonies. No one was aware of it at the time. It was just all of a sudden they had to. They were bringing in these bees. I remember the Beekeeping Association was shocked. Everyone was shocked. Any beekeeper was like, "Where is this coming from? How come anyone? No one was notified. How come we didn't know about it?" And all of a sudden they were coming in, and you know, we don't know how many they're going to bring in. We don't know really how many bees they're looking for. So let's put it this way. Right now in our province, the cranberry is a big popular product, and also blueberries. So they obviously need honeybees for pollination. They're the best ones to ask, well, how many hives do they require? Because why can't we use our local honeybees and breed them here? We do it very well. We last year had to apply to the province because we had too many bees. We didn't know what to do, so we said, we're going to have to sell some. And they said, no problem, you can sell your bees. So we've done that. But if we know, and if everyone can work together, surely we can meet the local demands, you know?
Paul Dinn of Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey in the Goulds is my guest today on Target St. John's. We're talking about beekeeping and the importation of bees. We'll be back right after this.
This is On Target St. John's on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain, On Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today is Paul Dinn. He's with Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey. And he is very much opposed to plans to import more bees into the province. So what is the latest on that?
The latest on that, from what we've heard, is that, you know, the province and the government have said, you know, they're against illegal importation. And the Beekeeping Association said the same. They're against illegal importation. But they don't, what they're not saying is the fact that they have a clause, that there's a permit process in place, that if someone wants to apply for it and actually go through the process, they can actually import honeybees from Western Australia, is the main part, that's the place that's been discussed. And they'll say that, well, they're certified and they've been checked and inspected. But what a lot of people don't realize is when they do inspections of bees, Each one of these packages could have upwards of 12,000 honeybees. So let's say they're bringing in, 500 packages. That's a lot of bees to be inspecting. And they're only apparently inspecting around 5 or 10% of those bees. When you're talking about the varroa mite, which is the most deadly blood-sucking mite on the planet, one of them, it actually is the size of the head of a pin. It's very, very tiny, and it can actually hide on a honeybee, and you won't even see it. So we're kind of looking at this like, you know, we have this beautiful resource here in the province. The bees have been, for the last 40 years, it's been documented that bees here are relatively healthy, and we just don't see them. We just don't see it as a risk worth taking. We want a complete ban on any importation. And the other big thing that they need to do is we'd like to see some major penalties and maybe imprisonment for anyone that would be willing to import bees illegally into the province. So that's where I think the focus is on. Let's put some very severe fines in place and imprisonment for anyone who's going to try to import honeybees from off the island.
You indicated earlier that you've been selling off some of your bees because you have so many. How have you built up your bee colony?
We it's interesting. We do what's called a split, basically removing so many frames of eggs and brood, and also like there would be a what they call a queen cup or a queen cell partially developed. And we'll put that to the side. And for every hive we have, we'll make two more, at least two more. Now, we've had some that are so strong, we could make four and five beehives out of it. So the thing about it is we also want to produce some honey. But if the province wanted to come to us and say, which they've never consulted with us. We're not part of the beekeeping association, so we've been completely left out of the whole idea of discussion. But anyways, if the focus was on developing more bees and building up the stocks, then that would mean our honey production would go down, because when you make up more hives, that hive will not produce as much honey. But if the province was to indicate, listen, we really need more beehives, how can we do that, and we were all to work together, I'm sure we could meet the local demand and also export as well, which is the long-term goal of the province, to export our bees to other parts of the world where they're in real demand for bees. You know, just to give you an example how big this business is, when you talk about Western Australia, Japan has actually become very, they're dependent on Australia, because all their pollinators are almost completely wiped out, all their native pollinators. And we don't want to end up happening here, that we have to be reliant on importation. So we have all our own natural pollinators as well. There's 50 species of native bees in the province. Right now, Japan was bringing in, I think it was 10,000 queens, actually queen bees, into the country from Australia, because they were going around literally self-pollinating with little Q-tips. And if you can imagine people going flower to flower, humans, having to do the work of bees with Q-tips, this is what's actually happening in other parts of the world.
And so, I've seen images of that, actually. It's really quite stunning and alarming. You indicated you're not a member of the Beekeepers Association. Why do you have this outlier status, I suppose?
We found, you know, there's a lot of their beliefs that we don't follow the same beliefs. Like, we don't consider a honeybee as livestock. The honeybee was just dominated, I think it wasn't this year, last year, as the most important species on the planet. And we think, you know, yes, they're used in agriculture, but they're much more important than your regular type livestock. And I think when you categorize something as livestock and they're shipping them and putting them, you know, these bees, we think there's better ways to care for honeybees and better ways to do the pollination that the province needs and that the world needs. When you're talking about these large-scale pollinators, these pollination operations, what they're doing is some of these companies, I know there's one in Alberta that has 20,000 hives. 20,000. Now, 100 hives for us is a big, it's a lot of work. We have to maintain and make sure the bees are okay, and we're looking at the bees as their welfare is what's most important. We're not looking at them as livestock where we're just throwing them on a truck bringing them across the country. And, you know, they, our bees have a life. We want them to have a good life, and we don't want to treat them rough. And our bees are very, very gentle. Our Newfoundland bees, I can go down and not wear any gloves or suit, and I can pick up a full frame of bees with thousands of bees on it and look at them, and they won't sting. They're very gentle. But if you look at some of these other operations, they have to wear protective suits, and they're duct taping their sleeves, and it's, they're using cranes, and everything's being banged around, and it's not something that's easy to watch. But I think we can do it differently here in this province, and our bees can be happy bees and be you know, having a good life. And the honey is one of the most sought after products in the world because we're not medicating them. The bees are good. We have the most beautiful, bountiful wildflowers and trees and shrubs in the world here. And people don't realize that what we have, and it's one of those things that once it's gone, it's gone. Once these mites or disease get here, our bees won't stand a chance. They will be completely wiped out.
You indicated there's about 900 colonies in Newfoundland and Labrador right now. How many would we need to develop and grow our agriculture?
The number I heard last year was around 1,600 colonies, and that's very achievable. That's not something that right now. One of the good things that did come out of that the province is doing is they're registering all beehives, so they're going to know where, you know, everyone has a beehive, and they want people to do regular inspections on their hives to check for the varroa mite and to do it, and that's a very positive thing. But instead of people being forced to do this and saying, oh, by law, you have to do this, we would like people to basically come out and say, you know, yes, I have a beehive. We're really, most people, a lot of people that are in our Adopt Hive program all want to share the fact of how good their bees are doing and how well they're doing. So if everyone's going to register their hives, and we know then, oh, right to the number that there's 910 beehives in the province, then as a group we can say, all right, if we can take one hive from that, or two from each one, we can make the beehives that the cranberry growers and the pollinate and the blueberry growers need, or agriculturalists need. But the thing is, we don't know what that number is. The province has not shared that, and we're still, that's another question that maybe Jerry Byrne can answer to you directly, you know?
Paul Dinn, is it realistic to prevent bees from being imported into the province?
It is very realistic. We have not had bees. We have not had the need for them. We don't have the need for bees coming from outside. The other thing is, like, these, our local bees have been, they're tested in our weather, and the majority of them are surviving, and they're doing great. So when you bring in another stock from somewhere else, you're changing the genetics. And you're talking about bees that are used to being in a very warm, if not hot, climate. Our bees are used to that. You know, they're like us. They're rough and tough, and they can take our weather, right? And we had the roughest winter, as you know, that we've had in years that I can remember in my lifetime with Snowmageddon, and our bees are out there, and they're doing great.
I wanted to touch a little bit more on the kind of year it's been, including Snowmageddon, when we come back after the break. Paul Dinn of Adelaide's Newfoundland Honeybees is my guest today on Target St. John's. We'll be back right after this.
This is On Target St. John's on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Our guest today is Paul Dinn. He's with Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey in the Goulds. And you mentioned Snowmageddon earlier, Paul. What kind of an impact did that have on bees this year?
It's interesting because honeybees, people don't realize they're very amazing, because what they can do is they actually regulate the temperature inside the beehive. So in the summertime now, when it's too warm, they'll actually bring water back to the hive, and they'll spray the water, and the bees will fan and circulate the air just like air conditioning. In the winter time, they actually will cluster together, and they don't hibernate like a bear would and go to sleep. They actually are awake the whole winter. They cluster in a big ball, and they vibrate their wing muscles and actually can increase the temperature. So I've been down at the beehives, very cold, and I can actually put my hand on the top of a beehive and feel the warmth coming out of it. And when they're buried under the snow, the biggest issue then is if we get a sudden change like we do on the Avalon of warmer temperatures, But if they're out in Central or up in Labrador somewhere and they get that cold snow on top of them, they're actually quite cozy and they do really well.
Could they suffocate, though? You have to clear out the hives a bit?
It's not suffocate as much as it is moisture buildup. So what happens a lot of times is you have to be very careful with moisture building up in a beehive and then raining back down onto the bees. And once they get damp or wet, that's what they will freeze and perish. So we do certain things with the hive to prevent that from happening. But really, it's not difficult. It's something, you know, you just, a lot of people that are new getting into this too. The other thing about it is, a lot of times beekeeping, there are people that have gone to university to become apiarists they're professional beekeepers. And the thing about it is, it's always good. Education's always great. The more you get, the better it is. But beekeeping has been something people have been doing for over 5,000 years. There's actual pictures of from Egypt of people beekeeping on the various drawings they had there. And the interesting thing about it is, beekeeping is something anyone can do. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be. It's just basic steps that you have to learn what to do here in our province and in your local area. And once you get an understanding of what, and it's not too technical, it's like anything. You can easily do it. And we want more people to get into beekeeping because we need more beekeepers. So we don't. This is not something we're trying to keep to ourselves and say, oh, we've got all the bees and all that. We want the province to grow and we want our bees to stay healthy and more people to get into it because it's just such a great thing we're doing, and it's good for the environment when it's done right. If you put too many bees in an area, beehives, they're very efficient pollinators and they can actually outcompete our native pollinators. And we don't want to see that happen either. So we're always looking for that balance.
That's what I learned this week, as a matter of fact. We had Barry Hicks and Dr. Hugh Whitney on the show earlier in the week, and I was very surprised to learn, because I didn't know that all of our honeybees in Newfoundland and Labrador are domesticated, and apparently it would be quite a bad thing if they become feral.
It's interesting, you know, because I know that some of our bees have become feral over time, and it's not necessarily... What they're concerned with, I think, is, again, it goes back to the disease part of things. And if say, the varroa mite was to come here and then bees were feral and going around, but this is the part that people don't understand. This importation's a really bad thing for our native bees as well, because what the government's plan to do is they would bring these bees in and then they quarantine them for 12 months. Now, my question, again, is to the chief apiarist and to Minister Byrne is, how do you quarantine a honeybee? Because they're flying all over God's creation. They're landing on the wildflowers just like our native bees are. And if a honeybee is sick from Australia and it lands on a flower and then gives this sickness to a native bee, well, now it's here. We've got that disease. And this is the thing that needs to happen, is we need to prevent any bees being imported into the province, whether legally or illegally, and we need to have severe fines and, like I said, imprisonment to make sure this doesn't happen. So Barry Hicks is correct, and Dr. Hugh Whitney, that we totally agree with that. We do not want to have too many bees in beehives in one area, because the native pollinators are the ones that are going to suffer.
So what's the average lifestyle of a bee? How long do they live? What does it look like? How often do they recycle their population, so to speak?
The honeybee only, it's interesting, each bee only lasts in the summertime for about 6 weeks. But a hive, when you look at a hive, they call it a super organism, because it acts as one. Everything they do is to work for the betterment of the hive. When they're doing this, so we've had some, like the queen honeybees, some queens can live up to 5 and 6 years, and they're doing quite well, and they'll just keep reproducing. So about every 21 days, a worker bee is born, which is a female, and this is just continually going on, and the hive can be there for years upon years. you know, but there's always new individuals replacing the older ones.
So the ones we commonly see, you know, on our flowers and that sort of thing, are they the worker bees? Are they the drones?
They're always the worker bees. The workers, actually, the females literally do all the work and all the collecting of pollen and nectar. And the drones are kind of just there for mating purposes. They will mate with the queen, and that's their entire job, you know?
What about bumblebees? They're not honey creators, are they?
No, they're not. They just have a very small nest. And we get calls about, you know, I have bees in my home, or I have bees here, and what do I do with them? And most of the time, they're either a wasp nest or bumblebees. And they're very small in numbers. They're just kind of doing their own thing. And they actually will all die off in the fall. And the new queen will be mated in the fall, and she'll overwinter and then come back and start to make a new nest and a new colony. But the other thing I wanted to say is, how do you quarantine something like that? Like, how do you say, you're not keeping them in a cage, they're going free in the environment. So that's another big thing that, you know, why it's not worth the risk, because they're going to intermingle with our native pollinators and possibly other honeybees.
So is this an actual plan to import bees, or is this just a contingency if, for instance, there's some kind of a crisis and we need to build up our local honeybee population?
The thing is, what the big question is, what is that crisis? What is that big catastrophe or, as they say, rare and circumstance that's going to happen? We need to know what that could be, because I've racked my brain and I cannot think what possibly could happen that would require us to be able to or need to import any bees from anywhere else. We have a perfect thing going here, and the only way that they're going to get sick or have the varroa mite is if someone brings them into the province. And in our mind, it's just not worth the risk to try to do this. So the other thing that they always talk about is the black market, that, oh, if we don't put something in, you know, a legal process, then people are going to import bees illegally. But that's nonsense. I mean, if you look at recently with cannabis and being legislated and it's now legal to have cannabis and sold at the store, there's still a large black market there. So I think that the point of saying that, it's going to stop people from importing bees illegally actually might have a reverse effect, because if they put too much red tape in front of someone and they say, oh, you've got to register and you've got to do this and you've got to do that, you've got to follow these rules and regulations, that might tempt others to say, you know what, let's bring them in illegally. So right now, what are the penalties? To my knowledge, there are no penalties, there is no fines, and there are actually people that are willing to risk importing illegally, and they most likely will. So I think the effort should be put on, as I said, severe fines and imprisonment.
Have you had any discussions to that end?
One day on Open Line, Mr. Burns said, you know, he said, Adelaide's honey, we could have done this differently. I can tell you, honestly, our door is always open, and we're always open to having discussions and talking with government to help the situation. The last thing we want to see is our bees get sick or get some kind of virus or disease or this varroa mite. And, whatever it takes that we have to do to keep these other bees from outside the province, we want to. Like, our door's open, come talk with us and let's have a good discussion on it, because to us it's very scary and very sad that anyone would even think of doing this. Like I said, we're one of the last places in the world. So once this disease hits here, or these multiple different diseases, or this varroa mite, it's not like you can turn back and say, oh, we can do it differently, because once it happens, like the rest of the world, we'll be stuck with it, and we'll have to medicate the bees, and we'll have to, you know, feed them sugar syrup and do things that we don't have to do today, you know. And the big one, Linda, for me too, is I'm very surprised with the Beekeeping Association, because we went back to look at their website and their mission statement, and their whole website is completely vanished now. I don't know what happened there, but that's up for another further discussion. It's because, and I think you should invite them onto the program. I mean, they were given $300,000 to do training and all this for raw management, I guess, and I'm not sure what, but how did that happen? Because I can tell you right now, Adelaide's, our company, will not see one penny of that money. And I'd like to know, you know, how does that happen that a not-for-profit company all of a sudden is given this amount of money? We can't find the fact, and we've researched, looked back on past documents, and there's a big symbol online, you can still see it, that has a big cross through that says, do not import. Again, we are against imports, and it's the Beekeeping Association. So what changed their mind? Why are they suddenly pro-import, looking at this as a possibility? Under no circumstances, there's not one reason that the government, we've asked them as of June 23rd when we sent our email, what are the rare circumstances that you would want to bring in honeybees? And to date, we have not received an answer.
Paul Dinn of Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey is my guest today on Target St. John's. We'll be back right after this.
This is On Target St. John's on VOCM. Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
Our guest today is Paul Dinn. He's with Adelaide's Newfoundland Honey in the Goulds. And Paul, you alluded to this before. It's been a bit of a difficult year for sure. We started with Snowmageddon and then moved into COVID. How has the current COVID situation affected your operation and what you do?
Well, we do a honeybee hike every summer, and we've had to put that off until next year because a lot of times we would lend people like a bee suit to wear and gloves, and we'd be very close to them, and they'd come into our home here. So we basically have had to put that off. And, you know, as bad as all these things were and are today dealing with COVID, this thing with the honeybees is, I mean, you're talking about something that's just, I just can't, it's the unthinkable to actually have a method of importing bees and taking a risk that just doesn't need to be taken. And I'd like everyone to, you know, let's work together. A lot of people are asking us, you know, what can they do? And we've got a huge following now. A lot of people, we've been actually doing a daily video and on social media, and basically giving reasons of why the government should not import. And some of the diseases that we brought up, and we've done videos on them. And just to give you an idea, American foulbrood is one of the worst ones you could ever get. And what happens with the beehive is they actually have to pour gasoline on it and burn the hive right where it is. There's no cure for them. So these diseases that might not come out right away, when they're bringing and importing bees, they could come up at a later date, and then we're stuck with it. So what people have been saying is, what can we do to help you? And we've told everyone, you know, write your local MHA, write a letter to Minister Jerry Byrne, and also contact the media and just, you know, and we've had a lot of people doing that and really catching on. And the thing you got to think about is other people do have a lot on their mind with COVID-19 and what we were all going through. It's not like we have extra time to be thinking about honeybees, but I'm pleading with everyone to please, you know, if we're going to keep our honeybees safe and we're going to have this wonderful, creature living with us and helping us, it's only going to make our problem stronger, and we can make our own colonies, and we can have our pollination done here without importing and becoming reliant on Australia or anywhere else.
If we can move away from the importation for a moment, I wanted to talk about this season that we've had. We started off rather warm. We've had a bit of a cool down. What kind of an effect does that have on the bees and on the food that they forage from?
This June has been fantastic for us. Usually it's around now we're just putting on 1 second honey box to collect honey. Most of our hives have two honey boxes on them now. And the colonies have, we've made up close to 70 new beehives. And a lot of those are going into our Adopt-A-Hive program, but a lot of them are going to be sold to new beekeepers. And they're going right across the province, some in the Bonavista area, some in Corner Brook. And the great thing about that is we want to work with people to make sure that they're successful at beekeeping. So we're always telling them, you know, tips and what to do and how to help them, because when you're new at something like this and you're getting into it, there is a lot to it and there's a lot of learning. But I mean, once you have someone that you can talk to and pick up the phone and say, hey, what do I do here? What do I do there? But this season has been fantastic. Like, we're trying to see, because each time you lay another box on Linda, the hive gets higher. And so some of them are pretty tall right now, almost like ready for the fall. And some of the colonies coming out of winter were the strongest we've ever seen. So they're just so good and they're so healthy that I can't help. It just gnaws on me the fact that someone would try to hurt those bees or bring in a disease to them. And we're not going to let it happen. We're not going to lie down and take it.
What is a bee's favorite food? Are they wildflowers? Are they cultivated flowers? Are they fruits and vegetables? What are they?
They're very interesting thing about it. They love all flowers, but they actually are very intelligent how they do that. So what they'll do is, when dandelions first come out, and that's the big nectar flow and pollen is for dandelions, the bees will actually stay on dandelions even though other flowers are starting to bloom. They will get as much from those dandelions as they possibly can. And then once they go through dandelion, the next one may be clover. And clover will come in and they'll do the same thing, stay on clover. Right now, around the 17th of July, but I think it's going to be earlier this year, we're watching our fireweed bloom. And when fireweed blooms, they'll all automatically go to fireweed. So what ends up happening is they're actually using the resource themselves to the best of their ability. They're taking what comes in, they're getting as much nectar and pollen from that, and then they move on to the next flower. And that will last them about 7 months here in our area here. And by the time the fall comes, they've got well over 100 pounds of honey for themselves, and we average about 70 pounds of honey for us to be able to take and sell to people in the public, you know?
So should people be planting flowers to make it easier on the bees, or are they going to be fine just the way things are?
I think they're going to be fine. I think people should always look at planting the flowers that they like, that they enjoy, because bees are extremely well at, you know, they actually will fly a 5-kilometer radius to collect various flowers. But the biggest thing that government also has to focus on, and the biggest killer and what's causing a lot of problem for our bees and native pollinators, is actually habitat loss. And that could be habitat loss by these large monoculture firms. So when you look at, say, the cranberries, for example, or for hay, what's very important is for people to be thinking, well, let's leave some natural areas for the bees, so it's not just one large crop that comes out at one time, and the bees will take as much as they can from that, and then there's nothing left for them to have. So we're always looking at, you know, habitat loss is a huge one. Bees actually do better in cities because of the fact that there are people planting so many flowers, and there's a diversity of flowers for them. So we got to be thinking, like right now, Newfoundland, the island, is a blank canvas for agriculture. We can have different crops and different things going on, but we always have to make sure that we leave lots of hedgerows and wild native flowers for the bees.
I noticed this early summer in particular. I haven't noticed as many bees in my neighborhood as I have in the past. I can only assume that means that somebody out there is no longer keeping bees that might have been keeping them last year.
It's possible they may have lost their colony, or they may have moved, or the bees, you know, the big one we want to protect too is our native pollinators, because they're everywhere, and they're able to better than anything get through our winters and our climate. So it's that combination of when you come here to our reserve, and we have a 10-acre honeybee pollinator reserve, what you'll see is that the bees and the native pollinators are all cohabitating and they're doing fine together. You'll see them all on the same flowers going, you know, from flower to flower, and they're not fighting with each other. But in the fall, there's what's called a nectar dearth. When the flowers are not giving off any more nectar, that's when you'll start to see them fighting, is because they're fighting, and they'll try to rob each other's honey as well. So there's a lot to bees and pollinators, but what we have right now is paradise. We just have such a good thing. And, you know, Western Australia and the Isle of Man, they are not going to be importing any bees into their countries either. And because why would you? Why would you ruin such a good thing?
Is there a concern, and you raised this earlier or touched on it earlier, that honeybees could, in fact, outcompete native species?
Well, that's what's important, and that's why this registering of hives is a great idea, because we can make sure it's, again, honeybee hives can be moved around, and they can easily. A beehive is, you know, may have 50,000 plus individual bees in there, and they can easily outcompete a native species, very, you know, no problem. So what's important for people to do and for beekeepers to do, and we do it, is look for how many hives are in that area, and let's make sure we don't have too many, and that the pollinators are also getting access to those flowers and are doing well as well. So the big one that's going to help honeybees and native pollinators is let's put nature back into our community. So every household should have a wild area with native flowers, and you know, let's not knock down every tree when we're developing a residential area. Let's leave some of our trees. Trees are fantastic for pollen and nectar, and what tends to happen, it's only to go up on Kenman Road, and you can see they level everything. And they remove the topsoil, and it's nothing but, you know, basic rock. And then they start to replant, and you'll see one little tiny tree. That's not where the future is heading. Many people in the world are realizing that we need our wild spaces. We don't need to remove nature. We need to live with nature.
I have a portion of my backyard that's quite steep and rocky, and that's where the wildflowers thrive. We just allow that to go wild because there's really not a lot we can do with it anyway. And I'm always amazed at all of the bees and other flying insects that I can see going from flower to flower. It's really quite extraordinary just to put a little chair down and just watch it happen.
And if everyone does that, if everyone leaves that little place, we're going to see our planet's going to change. I mean, We don't. You can still have a green lawn, and you can still have your regular gardens. But if you leave that little wild area, and if everyone else does, our bees and our pollinators, and not only those, but when you see more bees and pollinators, next thing you see more songbirds. Next thing you see more wildlife coming in to your neighborhood. And we need to live with nature, not remove it.
And I think more and more people are have that attitude. There was one time you know everybody wanted this perfect lawn and all that sort of thing. You see that that's not really the way anymore. Recent generations are sort of abandoning those ideas and allowing that kind of thing, those sort of rough areas to let go. I remember some Americans coming here one time, and they really liked the fact that there were all these sort of rough areas that, plants were growing up in the cracks of the pavement and all that sort of thing, and people just left them there.
That's right. And the thing is, you know, you got to think about it. Like, do we want to end up like what's happening in Japan right now and China, where we're going around with actual Q-tips to pollinate from flower to flower, and we're never going to do it as good as a honeybee or a bumblebee? Do we actually want to see our problems become like these places? They are now forced to import bees from Australia. They have no choice. We have a choice, and we need to make the right choice. Right now, we need to talk to our politicians, because I'm not sure who's advising them, but there's definitely something wrong with this picture, and whoever's advising them is making, there's money at the end of that trail. There's someone making a dollar, because this does not make sense to me. No matter which way you turn it, it doesn't make sense.
Paul, we're out of time. I do appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda.
And that's it for us for On Target St. John's for the week. I really appreciate everybody tuning in and taking in all the information that's being shared here. On Monday, we're going to be talking about the fisheries, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for listening.